This month, we have a really interesting new episode on well-being in the arts. If this interview raises any issues for you, or if you or anyone you know is struggling with mental ill health or needs support, please reach out to a mental health organisation in your country. In Australia, you can contact the Support Act Wellbeing Helpline, Lifeline or Beyond Blue, and their details are in the show notes.
Welcome to Theory of Creativity, where we discuss the tools, techniques and ideas for growing arts, culture and creativity in our world. My name is Tandy Palmer-Williams and I'm founder and managing director of a research agency called Pattern Makers. In this series, I join with colleagues from theatre, dance, music, visual arts, literature and heritage to speak with experts in research, business, economics, technology and policy. We talk about the challenges facing arts and cultural organisations today, like engaging audiences, securing funding, and creating positive impacts through our work. I want to help grow your organisation bigger, better, and stronger so that collectively we can do even more good in the world. In today's episode, I speak with Tracy Margison, Head of Program of the Arts Wellbeing Collective at Arts Centre Melbourne. The Arts Wellbeing Collective is a mental health and wellbeing program specifically tailored for the performing arts industry. Since the pilot program, the Arts Wellbeing Collective has grown rapidly and it's now quite a comprehensive sector-wide initiative, the only one of its kind actually anywhere in the world. Tracy herself has actually recently moved on to a new role as workplace mental health and wellbeing consultant at Superfriend, but she was really kind to make time for this episode in her last week at the Arts Wellbeing Collective. It's testament to her passion for this topic, and I have to admit, I love this conversation so much, I'm now ready to start an Arts Wellbeing fan club. Tracy dropped so many truth bombs in our conversation, I just know you're going to love it and feel energized and inspired to continue improving the wellbeing of the people around you, no matter what role you're in. This episode is part of a season of Theory of Creativity supported by Creative Victoria, and it's centered around the idea of real change and renewal. We're exploring the tools, technique, and ideas we can harness to build a newly thriving arts and culture sector post-pandemic, and even herald in the next renaissance. Stick around after the interview for my top takeaways from the discussion. And to keep you abreast of great research from around the world, I'll also be sharing this month's most clicked research news item from our monthly Culture Insight and Innovation update. Now, without further ado, here's my interview with Tracy. So welcome to the podcast, Tracy.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm thrilled you're catching up with us before you finish up in your current role. Congratulations on the new role that you're going to.
Thank you.
But we're here to talk today about all the amazing work you've been doing with the Arts Wellbeing Collective over the past few years and the amazing resources you've created. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure thing. So for anyone listening who's not familiar with the Arts Wellbeing Collective, it's an Arts Centre Melbourne initiative that promotes positive mental health and wellbeing in the performing arts industry. So we are a collective model. So we have hundreds of incredible arts and cultural organisations that we work with, and together we do our very best to identify what those really unique challenges are in the performing arts industry that have an impact on our mental health and wellbeing, and then design prevention initiatives to promote positive mental health. So that might look like resources, programs, services, sector initiatives informed by really strong evidence bases. I think in this area, there tends to sometimes be quite a lot of mythology and misinformation. So we're really strong on working on a really strong evidence base of positive psychology, clinical psychology, organizational development, and workplace health and safety research, so that we can be as practical and as evidence-based as possible, so that, you know, people kind of know what they can be doing. I think in this work, sometimes I think we all understand why mental health is important. I don't think anyone kind of goes, oh, whatever, who cares? I think there's a really kind of wonderful shared value and vision around the importance and significance of looking after ourselves. But it tends to be in the how where that can get tricky, where we go, I get that I need to and I get why it's important, but I don't know how to do it in this industry and the unique context in which we work. So I think that's where Arts Wellbeing Collective has a role to play in developing that how.
Well, I love your focus on evidence-based strategies, and certainly that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the podcast. But before we get into some of that, I just would like to hear a little bit about your background and really what has been the kind of driving force for you in this role.
Sure. So my background is fairly mixed, a bit of a kind of portfolio career, I suppose. I've worked across local government roles, small to medium sector. I'm an independent producer and theatre maker myself, and done a bit of touring and a little bit of playwriting and a lot of arts marketing and arts management. I then have an undergrad in semiotics, so like metonymy and metaphor and lexicography, and then postgrad in arts management. And then last year, my lockdown project was another postgrad in business psychology, which obviously really strongly complements the work that we do at the Arts Wellbeing Collective. So yeah, I've been working in a whole lot of different roles and was really fortunate to be working with wonderful people and wonderful practitioners. And I was working in a marketing role at Gasworks down in Port Melbourne, and was an awesome role and great people and great place. And I was thinking about what I kind of wanted to be doing next. And I spoke to a careers counsellor, and she said to me, if you went to a show and you were the only person in the audience, how would you feel? And I was like, well, as long as it wasn't a show that I was supposed to have been marketing, that would be fine. I said, that would be kind of fun. And she said, yeah, I thought so. She said, you're completely driven by meaning and purpose. She said, all of your kind of things around what drives you at work, it's all around meaning and purpose. And she said, I don't think you get meaning from getting people to the arts. So I don't think you get meaning from marketing shows. So I think that, you know, if people aren't that into theatre, you're like, that's okay. You can be into whatever you're into. She said, all of your energy and everything that you talk about and are passionate about is about the people. It's about the people working in this sector. She said, you need to find a sector-facing role. And I was like, yes, that's exactly right. And so when this role came up, I was like, that's what I want to be doing. I want to be working on making the world of work for people who work in the performing arts better.
Gosh, well, how lucky are we to have you have had you in this role? Honestly, such an accomplished and clever person in such an important field. I think obviously mental health, now that we're coming into the 18 months of the pandemic, there really is no more important issue. And I think it's interesting. I have a friend in the corporate sector who's going through a leadership program at the moment, and they're spending more than half of the time of the program talking about mental health, resilience, well-being. And so I thought it was so interesting that now leadership is the skills that we need in our leaders in this next era are so much about well-being. So I'm thrilled to have you on the podcast today. I'd love to now come back to some of those issues you touched on around mental health and the research, because this is not a new issue in our sector. And in fact, there are some quite specific challenges in the performing arts that I'd love to kind of get a sense of from you. Tell me about, you know, when you first started working in this role pre-pandemic, what did you learn about what's going on in our sector and how important this issue is?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's so interesting that I think the pandemic has magnified this conversation and magnified the challenges that people are facing. But yeah, the silver lining is that we are having a lot more conversations on a community level about the importance of mental health and well-being. And it's interesting that we were, you know, well and truly running pre-COVID as Arts Wellbeing Collective, and we're very grateful for that. I think it would have been incredibly challenging to try and set up the program during COVID. But yeah, our pilot program was actually in 2017, so a few years prior. And when we started Arts Wellbeing Collective, so it came from our beautiful CEO, Claire Spencer, at Arts Centre Melbourne, and she'd been looking at mental health and wellbeing in the Arts Centre Melbourne team and in our workforce and what sorts of things we could be doing better. And she said that she felt that what we had in place was reactive. So, you know, responding when someone said that they were struggling. She said she didn't feel that there was enough happening that was proactive and preventative. And when she kind of went looking for what might work in our context, a lot of the existing solutions were really designed for a much more traditional workforce. So one that worked 9 to 5, you know, in an office, a pre-pandemic normal workforce, for want of a better phrase, and didn't quite pick up some of the really unique challenges that were being faced in the performing arts. And as she was kind of considering this, she reached out to a few of our resident companies, so Melbourne Theatre Company and the Australian Ballet and so on. And she just sent an email saying, you know, we've been thinking about this and maybe thinking about what we might be able to do. Is anyone else thinking about this? And she said it was basically the fastest anyone had replied to one of her emails. And it was like, yes, we are struggling with very similar things and we're not sure what to do about it. Then at that time, a piece of research was released that was commissioned by Entertainment Assist and undertaken by Victoria University. And this piece of research looked into a whole lot of different factors of working in the entertainment industry. And it was quite startling in its findings. So of the nearly 3,000 entertainment industry workers that were surveyed, around 15.2% had experienced symptoms of moderate to severe depression, which set it, I think, at about five times higher than what we see in the general population. Around 44% had experienced symptoms of moderate to severe anxiety, which sets it at about 10 times higher than what we see in the general population. And nearly one in 10, I think, had reported suicidal ideation. And this is, again, like really startling statistics. And I think it put numbers to what a lot of people had anecdotally known to be true. You know, it's tricky. Sometimes you might think that you're the only one, or, you know, it's just your experience. And then when you see those kind of cold numbers and go, oh, this is actually far more prevalent than anybody thought. I think that that piece of research was really instrumental in helping shift the conversation. And also, I think too, because while there had been research conducted into mental health and well-being in the entertainment industry before, it had typically focused on our frontline creatives, so on our actors and musicians and dancers. And I think in that way that even though the results were potentially similarly startling, we tended to take it with a grain of salt. You know, there was a bit of like, oh, well, they're creative and they're artistic. What do you expect? They're sensitive. And this piece of research interviewed production teams, crew members, technical teams, artistic directors, general managers, marketers, publicists, as well as our frontline creatives. And I think for that reason, it demonstrated that this was not the realm of the tortured artist. This was cultural and systemic. This was the way that we were working. This was processes and, you know, cultures that had built up over time and had gone unchecked and were not serving people's mental health and, in fact, having a really detrimental effect. I think in some ways I personally felt like that was a silver lining. I think if there was some strange magical gene that everyone in the performing arts had that predisposed them to mental health problems, and it's like, well, there's not really anything we can do about that. that's just our biology. Whereas this one, it's like, oh, so this is just this is how we've been operating that's actually having this effect. We're in charge of that, right? That's in our control. That's how we work. We can totally change that. Like, that's absolutely doable. So I think for me, it was much more empowering to go, well, if this is systemic, this is changeable. And I think that also, to this, you know, the journey that Arts Centre was on, made Claire kind of go, well, this isn't just Arts Centre and our RESCOs. This is the small to medium sector, the independent sector, regional, rural, freelance artists. This is everyone actually in it together. And thus the collective was born.
So for those of us who have been in lockdown, or for all of us who are facing uncertainty, how is the pandemic changing this issue, and what have you noticed about how it's shifting over time?
Yeah, it's been an interesting 18 months, to say the least. I think when the crisis first hit, so back in March 2020, there was a crisis response. You know, we slung into crisis mode that weekend, watching all of the cancellations and postponements and closures come through was so confronting. You know, I remember waking up and seeing the news that Broadway had closed, and Broadway stops for nothing and no one, and that whole experience was so surreal. And I think now, as we're nearly 18 months into the crisis, it has continued to shift and change, and I don't think anyone quite expected it to roll out in this way. I don't think anyone could have really foreseen exactly how this was going to impact our sector and the community in general. I remember early on we were reflecting about, you know, what Arts Wellbeing Collective needed to do and how we could best support people at that time. And in that immediate crisis, it had been that immediate support, so connecting people to the help that they needed and advocacy work around supporting our sector and ensuring that people were being looked after and, you know, the financial implications of what was happening as well. And then as it continued, we were reflecting on what was happening. And I remember one of our wonderful consultants spoke with me and said, has anything actually changed here? Is there anything actually new? And I thought about it and we sort of said, well, with the exception of the health crisis itself, all of the problems we're experiencing are problems that we'd experienced before, just absolutely magnified. You know, it was like someone just turned a massive follow spot onto every problem that we'd had and said, okay, let's now see what it looks like when this happens to everyone at exactly the same time. We look at the things that we were always struggling with. So the gig economy, so low financial security, low job security, working contract to contract, a highly casualized workforce, a freelance workforce that weren't protected by organizational structures, entire swathes of people without access to paid leave or sick leave, a lack of understanding at a government level of the way that the performing arts functions and thus how best to support people financially through this time. You know, they were on the table pre-pandemic, and I think like that's probably true for a lot of issues that have been highlighted through the pandemic, almost like there's nowhere to hide when it throws our communities into stark relief of things that were able to be hidden under the surface or things that were okay if they happened to a small amount of people. Those kinds of perceptions have really shifted and went, okay, well, this is really kind of reflecting those structures that have not actually been working as well as they could be, and they haven't been protecting people or, you know, ensuring that people could live and thrive in their life and work. So yeah, I think that that was really showing up, all of those things. I think there's definitely some impacts that we won't know about as well. So I feel like there'll be, in years to come, we'll see the long-term impacts of things. I think we can see, you know, the short-term impacts are very obvious in terms of the loss of work, the loss of income, the absolute strain on our leaders and on our companies, the risks to touring, to travel, border closures, snap lockdowns, all those things we can see the instant impact of them. But I think the true impact we probably won't know for a few years in terms of how it's, you know, fundamentally shifted the way that we work in the industry.
I mean, one thing that we've noticed in our audience research, so for instance, the Audience Outlook Monitor, where we hear from, you know, tens of thousands of people every few months, is a growing understanding among the public of some of the issues, which I kind of see as a positive that now, having been through the crisis that we have, the blessing is that there's broader understanding, you know, both within our sector and among our audience and community base of how we work and what some of these, you know, causal issues are. So I think that's a positive. And from a leadership perspective, it cannot be ignored anymore. This has to be addressed and we can't survive unless it is. So let's turn to some of the resources that you've created for leaders around creating mentally healthy workplaces and leading change from within our organizations. What are some of the things that a leader can or should be doing?
Yeah, 100%. I think you're right too, in that there has been some great, you know, I'd say silver linings again, but I think that's, you know, I think the optimistic flip side of what has happened is that reflection on how we work and those structures and a wider understanding of that in the broader community. And also, I remember like pre-COVID, we used to sometimes talk about if only people knew what it was like to not have theatre. You know, we sort of felt a little bit taken for granted, or like the value wasn't kind of truly appreciated. And some of those really intangible things that we talk about connection and coming together and that shared experience and, you know, the power of storytelling and the way that it changes perceptions and understandings of issues and, you know, the power of representation and of telling untold stories that have, you know, gone too long without being heard, and all of these things that we see, and then we go, oh, or a pandemic could just take it all away and actually our audiences really, really miss it. oh, there you go.
Absence really does make the heart grow fonder. I think we all know in such a heightened way now what it means to us.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I think that, you know, leaders can take heart in, I guess, like having this really real example of what is so loved about the industry and about our workforce. And I guess if COVID's proven anything too, it's that it is entirely people driven. You know, this industry absolutely exists on its people. It thrives on its people. And for us to be able to do that work and do that work well, we need to be well. I think sometimes we almost separate it, you know, we almost go, oh, well, the show is the most important thing, you know, and if we create the show at the expense of our physical and mental health, maybe that's okay. And then it's like, so who's going to be in the show? You know, who actually is going to be teching the show? Who's going to be selling tickets? Who's going to be marketing it? Who's producing it? Who's getting donors to it? Like,
and who's going to be around for the next show?
Yeah, it's entirely people driven. You know, I think too, like we almost hero worship a bit of that fatigue and that burnout. You know, it's like the more wrecked you are after the show, we somehow equate that to having done a really good job. You know, we kind of go, oh, well, if you're really exhausted, you've given it everything.
It's a badge of honor. Yeah.
Yeah. And you go, well, I don't know about, you know, I would assume that most people do their best work when they're energized, excited, you know, passionate, capable, thoughtful, you know, authentic, honest, awake. I don't think people do their best work under immense pressure, tired, fatigued, angry, frustrated, exhausted, on the edge, insecure. Like, that's not a recipe for doing really good work. And our work is people driven. We need our people to be well.
Absolutely. There's research that shows that if we're not resting, we're not learning. And so to be able to learn and grow, we need to rest. And I'm not a performer and I've, you know, work in a research field, but one of the things that I've learned through this time is the importance of looking after myself and modeling the right behaviors, because I've certainly had a few moments over this last lockdown period, that's for sure. And I realized that, you know, if I don't take this seriously, not only am I going to fall apart, but, you know, I'm responsible for a whole team of people. And so this has got to be number one. So modeling is something that I'm trying to do and shift that badge of honor about overwork and being up at midnight still working on something and change that and go, no, I'm going to take breaks. I'm going to rest. I'm going to walk every morning, because these are the things that it takes for us to keep functioning and for us to keep creating value in the world. And if we are really passionate about doing that, then we've got to take this very, very seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. We sometimes joke in Us for Being Collective that we want to get t-shirts made that just say, have you tried resting? Like, just start there.
Yeah. It's funny how when everything's falling apart and you're having a bit of a moment, how you forget some of those little practices. Meditating, doing the morning walks, like taking time for rest, booking a day of leave, all of those little things. It's just like every time it happens, going back to basics, those things really do work. But anyway, I digress. Let's talk about creating mentally healthy organizations and how would you approach it?
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the things that you've just said is so great is around role modeling those behaviors. So, you know, sometimes if our leaders are exhausted, burnt out, working around the clock, sending emails at 3 a.m., you know, working through their weekends, putting pressure on their marketing teams to be on site for an EPK, whatever it is, that flows through. So, you know, leaders can role model looking after themselves, and it's got the double benefit that you not only encourage other people to look after themselves, but you're looking after yourself. And, you know, we know all those old adages in terms of, you know, you can't pour from an empty cup or to fit your own oxygen mask first before helping others. And it is absolutely true. We hear them over and over because of the truth that's in those basics. So yeah, I think role modeling is a really great one. So actually looking after yourself and being honest and open about the importance of that is really clear. In terms of that kind of broader creating a mentally healthy workplace approach, we always start with the work that we do with organizations and companies And in the arts, you know, a company can be anything. It can be a major institution, or it can be a group of independent artists who are rehearsing in a lounge room to put on a profit share in a black box. Well, actually, that's a company. Like, you're now an organization, and you might not have the structures of a HR and finance department and all that sort of thing, but you have no less commitment to needing to make sure that that's a psychologically safe space that you're encouraging people to work in so they can do their best work. And in that way, where we always start is simply with, what does that look like to you? What does a mentally healthy workplace look like? I think we can be so determined to jump to solutions and to action because we tend to be problem solvers in the arts. We like getting the show up. We like working at speed. We like working in almost a finite way where we create something and we put it out into the world, and then we create something else and we put that out into the world. And really kind of stepping back and going, rather than jumping into action and jumping into all the things we can do, you know, that might help people's mental health and well-being, is go, well, what does it look like when we're at our best? How does that look and feel? How does that show up? What are those markers where we know our workplace is mentally healthy? What does that actually look like? And that will be different for every company. I remember doing this with a company who spoke about hearing laughter in the foyers, you know, in their spaces that they worked in. And I loved that. I loved that as a, you know, as something that they looked for. And they were, you know, talking about the fun and the joy, and that's when they felt like they were at their best, when there was laughter and joy. You know, so it's sort of that thing of, we sometimes kind of associate mental health with mental illness. So we sometimes use it interchangeably and often hear it in news and media as synonymous. But our mental health is often about what's going well. You know, like our physical health, we don't necessarily associate with illness. We think of our physical health as going to the gym and eating well and sleeping well. What are those things that we associate with our mental health that is in that strength-based frame? So those things that help us thrive and help us reach our potential or to work productively and fruitfully, you know, those sorts of associations of mental health and those sorts of definitions. And thinking about it in that frame, that can inform action. But I think without kind of knowing what your vision for a mentally healthy workplace is, it can be really tricky to know where to start. It can feel really overwhelming. But if you kind of go, okay, well, you know, it looks like this, it feels like this, we'll know we're there when, we'll see behaviors like, then suddenly you go, oh, now there's heaps of cool stuff we can do. I think too, when we jump into action, we can sometimes treat symptoms and not causes. So we can jump into, oh, someone's exhausted, send them home early today, and go, okay, well, that might give them a nap this afternoon. But will that shift their workload? Will that reduce some of the stress and pressure that they're under? Is that team adequately resourced? Is what we're asking of them reasonable? Is, you know, the pressure that we under allowing for the shifts and changes and the uncertainties and the responsiveness and reactiveness that we do sometimes come up against with the public health responses that we see through COVID? I think that if we can start to go, what's actually causing someone to get to that point, we can start to address those causes rather than just treat the symptoms over and over and over. And that's how we start to make some of those shifts, is when we truly understand the cause and the problems that we're dealing with. That makes the actions really a lot easier than just jumping straight into action and hoping for the best.
Gosh, it sounds so obvious when you say it, but I actually think that's really profound, is looking at, okay, what is causing these symptoms? And if we do one thing, let's address the cause, not the symptoms, right? That's kind of the hard part, isn't it? So, yeah, it's interesting thinking about, you know, why is the hard part not being addressed? Because it's hard. So from your work with organizations, what are some of the common factors of organizations who are making headway? Is there something they're doing in terms of a process they're following, or are there key factors in terms of what that organization looks like, who's in the team, how it's structured? What is the key to kind of meaningful change?
I think the things that I see as through themes is a real curiosity of how things can be done better. So a real kind of questioning of the way we've always done things, and a thoughtfulness as to whether that's the best way to have always done things, and a kind of openness to learning and openness to considering if there's a different way that we can operate, or a different way that we can tour or schedule or produce or present, and a commitment to people, you know, a commitment to the people being complex, unique, capable, interesting, fascinating, intelligent, thoughtful beings that really love their work. No one comes to the arts to work in the arts because it's, you know, awesome money and awesome hours. Like, we come to it because we love it. And that shared passion is awesome. You know, that's what is one of the factors that makes this industry so special. The risk of that passion, though, is that we can accept a lot of not so great practices because we love it so much, and we will work through not so great conditions. And I kind of have this feeling that sometimes people don't know how good it can be. You know, we can accept kind of not great practice as either that's the way it is, you know, that's the way the industry is, that's the way this company is, whatever it might be. And it's like, no, actually, it can be awesome. It can be so good. And rather than just sort of shifting the dial incrementally, like transforming. And I think seeing companies that really think deeply about what they're trying to achieve and how to achieve that in a way that centers their people and their people's successes, that's where we really see those outcomes, is in that questioning and curiosity and willingness to learn and willingness to engage and involve people.
Interesting.
Yeah.
One of the things that's sort of coming to mind as I'm hearing you talk is the fact that we're in an extended lockdown right now. And in the first few weeks of lockdown, we were like, right, this is just going to be a temporary thing. You know, our operations manager can homeschool and, you know, we just need to, like, you know, cut back on 2-3 hours or something like that. So for homeschooling, you know, as the weeks went by, it's like, okay, this isn't a temporary thing. What we're looking at here is an extended period, probably years, where we're going to be dealing with uncertainty. We could face a whole range of challenges in terms of the virus, in terms of our economy, in terms of God knows what. So it really got to the point for me where I was like, okay, what would it look like for us to be more resilient and thrive in this environment long term? If this is how it's going to be, then how can we not just survive and get through it, but acknowledge that the outlook, you know, it's going to be challenging. And so let's stop now and think about what are the capacities we need in ourselves, in our teams? How can we make sure that we enjoy our work, and how can we set ourselves up to thrive even if the conditions aren't ideal? So even if we don't get back to normal kind of thing, what can we do? And that's an ongoing process, but I think it's time that we acknowledge that we're not going to get back to normal. And so we need to start looking at things now for how we can really thrive in the future. And so I was just curious if you think it's possible to thrive in lockdown, you know, like what are you seeing in terms of the people that are managing to stay well right now?
That's such a great question. I think the complexity of what people are dealing with, living with, experiencing is changing constantly. So I think everyone's having ups and downs and good days and bad days and all those things. And I think that's totally normal. I loved what you said before about what can we do to go well during this. I remember working with a company where they had been working on a production that was directed by someone with very specific physical needs. And at the start of the production, they spent some time speaking with her about what she needed in the space and how they needed the space to look and be, and schedules and all those sorts of things to make sure that she could do her best work. And they said, after that experience, why don't we do that all the time? What do we say to people? What do you need? What does this look like for you to go really well here? It's such a lovely thing. Like, sometimes we sit there going, what do we do? How do we make this better? And you're like, oh, you could just ask. you could just kind of have that conversation and have a chat with people and see what they need at the moment, and know that that will change. And some people will be loving working from home, and some people will be struggling. Some people will be in great situations in their home lives, and some people will not. Some people have caring responsibilities. Some people will be homeschooling. Some people won't. You know, it's sort of everyone's different, and that's a joy. I think that's so wonderful. Is people's difference, you know, and is what we each bring to the world is so special and just of infinite worth. I think kind of a lot of our hangover from the way we've worked, you know, through the Industrial Revolution and those sorts of things, we haven't quite adapted yet. We haven't quite adapted to people-driven business. We're sort of still thinking as people, as machines.
Tracy, that's so interesting. I mean, one of the concepts that I've found really helpful in the last few weeks is this idea of active hope. It's interesting, hope right now, because there's so much going on, but active hope, and I'll link the article in the show notes, but it basically involves acknowledging disturbing realities and finding our part in a constructive response. So a useful question is, if the story of things working out well, or even not getting much worse, was to happen through me, what part might I play? And so I think it's a way to just think about, yes, there's all this stuff going on, but, you know, what can I do? What can I say? If things were going to get better through me, what would I be doing? And to stay focused on those actions. So we don't have much time left, even though we could probably talk all day. But to end, what I'd like to ask you is, if there's one tool, technique, or idea that listeners could adopt to contribute to a newly thriving arts sector, and that's the theme of the season we're doing at the moment with Creative Victoria. So if there's one step that listeners could take, what would it be?
I love what you said about hope. And I think sometimes optimism can get a bad rap, where it can be associated with, you know, sunshine and rainbows and ignoring anything that's bad. And actually, it's sort of about what's the agency that each of us have to look after ourselves and look after each other, because actually that's huge. And if we all place our energy in the things over which we have agency and influence, and this, you know, beautiful shared vision of how wonderful and special and vibrant and dynamic not only our industry but our communities can be, that's where true change will come from each of us working with hope and agency and passion, care and kindness and curiosity. But I'm just a big fan of curiosity all the time. So if in doubt, start there.
Thank you so much for this wonderful conversation. Where can people go to find out more about your offering at Arts Wellbeing Collective and stay in touch with you in your next steps?
Yeah, so visit artswellbeingcollective.com.au. Feel free to flick us a message through the inquiries. It won't be answered by a bot. It comes straight to the team.
A real person.
Feel free to say hi. I'm around, you know, always reach out to me, LinkedIn or socials, or obviously email the AWC team and they can put you in touch with me as well. Always up for a chat. Love these topics. Love these discussions. Love that these conversations are being had. And yeah, just taking care of ourselves and taking care of each other. It's one of the very best things we can do now and all the time.
Sure is. Thank you so much. And congratulations to you and everyone at the Arts Wellbeing Collective and Arts Centre Melbourne for this amazing initiative. So valuable right now, and all the best with your next steps.
Thank you.
So that's it. I'm so grateful to Tracy for that chat and everyone at Arts Centre Melbourne who's contributed to this amazing work. My top takeaways from the conversation were, number one, most people actually do their best work when they are energized, excited, thoughtful, innovative, awake, generous, obviously. Our work is people driven and we need to look after ourselves. Number two, there are some systemic issues leading to poor mental health outcomes in our sector, which are really difficult, but it's good to know it's not just biology. It doesn't have to be that way. These issues can be addressed. Our workplaces can be bloody amazing places to work, and we can make great art and have wonderful mental health. Why shouldn't we have it all? The pandemic seems to have spotlighted some of the issues, like the gig economy, low financial security, our highly casualized workforce without leave benefits, vulnerable people freelancing, and a lack of understanding in central government of how the performing arts actually functions. The short-term impact of the pandemic on the performing arts sector is pretty well known now, but we probably don't even know the long-term impact yet. So this is really important. There are some things we can all be doing to look after ourselves, our teams, no matter what role we're in. And it's really powerful, I think, to not just think about the symptoms of burnout and book that yoga teacher, but really look at the causes. That was my amazing revelation through this, is really looking at the causes of burnout and what we can do to change things. There are so many great resources at artswellbeingcollective.com.au, and what a great time to make this a priority as we look forward to the festive season and hopefully a well-earned break after one hell of a year. Now, every month I share the most clicked new resource shared in our monthly newsletter, the Culture Insight and Innovation Update. Last month, the top two were actually Pattern Makers publications, including the latest results from our national tracking study of audiences, which you can check out at www.thepatternmakers.com.au/COVID-19, one word. We also recently released a tips and tactics resource with practical actions from the research, along with insights from leaders in the culture sector. So it covers topics like how we can prepare ourselves and our teams to be ready to respond to the ongoing uncertainty this pandemic is throwing at us, and how to handle a growing desire among some audience members right now for uplifting content. I had some great perspectives from the sector on this, how we tackle it and how we think about challenging works during this time. So I encourage you to check that out. But interestingly, the third most popular item in the newsletter was actually some new research reported in Museums Association recently, which showed that almost 70% of people think that cultural spaces make their local area a better place to live. And cultural spaces such as museums, libraries, and theatres are more sought after than pubs and restaurants on England's high streets, according to the research. So check that out and tweet it around. Luckily, it's not a case of either or, and I, for one, am looking forward to both in moderation this summer as we emerge from a long lockdown. Fingers crossed we're going to have some stability over summer in Australia. Borders are opening. Things are looking up. I'd say the tone in all of our audience research at the moment is cautious optimism. Let's see what happens, but there's lots we can do over this season to rest and reflect and have some time out and think about how we're not going to go back to how things were, how we're going to create a new normal in our sector. Thank you so much for listening. I'm going to pop a link to all of the above in the show notes, along with a link to subscribe for our next Culture Insight and Innovation Update. My team is currently working on the final issue for 2021, and it is a goodie. I hope you are well. I'm thinking of all of you listening and hoping that you are going to have some great rest and relaxation over summer. So thanks for enjoying this episode, and see you next time. If you heard something that you want to know a little bit more about, you can visit the show notes. These are a set of resources that my team compile on every episode, including the guest bios, key points covered, and useful links to resources mentioned in the conversation. You can access these at our website, www.thepatternmakers.com.au/theory of creativity, one word. Now, if you've made it to this point, then I have a favour to ask. Will you take 30 seconds to rate and review Theory of Creativity? And if you hit subscribe, you'll be helping more people hear these ideas, techniques, and tools so that collectively we can do even more good in the world. Sound like a plan? We'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners upon whose lands this podcast is made, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. And we want to acknowledge First Nations people everywhere. Season 2 of Theory of Creativity is supported by the Victorian Government through Creative Victoria. This project has also been assisted by the Australian Government through the Australia Council, its arts funding and advisory body. A big thank you to my team and everyone who has helped to make this podcast available publicly for free. Thank you for listening, and please take care.